Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Cheap Seats Chatter, your weekly baseball podcast. I am your host, Alex Clark, joined today, as always, by the undeniable, undisputable best co-host in all of baseball podcasts, and that is Matthias Alba-Kurosaki and Ryan Splash Potts. My main men, as we like to start every podcast, how you doing on this fine, fine Monday evening?
You know, I'm chilling. It rained a lot in New York today. I watched the Mets lose, but you know, honestly, the Mets look like they need a day off. But other than that, I'm doing fine. You know, just hanging in there. You know, my pool is closed now for a bit, so I kind of have to work out on my own. But you know, it is what it is. But yeah, we're doing fine.
Well, I have a new favorite left side of the infield. Move over Dansby and move over Austin Riley. It's Rodolfo Castro and O'Neill Cruz. I watched Braves Pirates tonight, and Castro is a lunatic, and O'Neill Cruz is a Martian playing baseball. So Cruz had a missile, the Cruz missile, as they call it in Pittsburgh. Just felt like if there were decks in Pittsburgh, it would have gone to the 17th deck. Just absolute laser beam. And then he turns around two innings later, has a 95 mile per hour throw from shortstop, which isn't one of his fastest three of the season. And if you remember the name Rodolfo Castro, yes, he's the player that slid into third base with his phone flying out. He had a slick steal today. He swiped second, but he did a swim move. And I don't think I think Dansby saw a ghost on the field, like live and in person. So congratulations, Pirates. You're going to be must-watch MLB TV material for the next 25 years because Cruz is a Martian. Castro is hilarious. And also, Key Brian Hayes exists. He didn't play today, but he exists, and he's one of my favorite players in the history of the sport. So good job, Buckos.
So I can't get behind calling him Cruz Missile, and the only reason for it is because I played way too much Madden a few years ago, where in the long shot storyline, the best friend to Devin Wade was named Colt Cruz, and whenever he played, they called him the Cruz Missile. And so now I don't want to associate the two together, so I will not be referring to him as the Cruz Missile. I will just be referring to him as the Martian. So as I like what he said there. I'm doing all right. You know, had a pretty solid day at work, although I will say my Mariners definitely are like your Mets there, Mac. Needed a day off after losing 2-3 from the Oakland Athletics after putting an absolute whooping on them in the first game. But losing 2-3, you still lost the series. Thankfully, today was an off day. Again, these podcasts were recorded a day in advance. So with all that being said, there's one player in baseball right now that is the hottest in the game. He is one of the game's only 100 WAR players, and how is he still hitting this damn well? He is now at 693 career home runs. The man, the myth, the machine, Albert Pujols. Now at 693 career home runs, just seven away from the incomprehensible mark of 700. And what is he's already said is going to be his final season, regardless of whether or not he gets to 700. Guys, there are a ton of stats we'll bring up when it comes to Pujols, but I want to open it up to you guys first. Talk to me a little bit about this tear that this man that is already in his early to mid-40s is currently going on in Major League Baseball.
Well, I mean, he's just simply been unstoppable. And this, he's really turned back the clock. And it's, you know, when he signed with the Cardinals this offseason, I didn't expect him to get a ton of playing time. But lately, he's been getting the playing time. And he, you know, we already knew he could crush lefties. He's hitting .388 against lefties this year. But now it seems like nobody can get him out. I mean, in the second half, he's sitting close to .450. He's slugging about 1,000, I'm pretty sure. Heck, coming into today, he was slugging .939 in the second half, .500 on base percentage, seven homers, and only 54 plate appearances, and then added another one tonight. I mean, he's just been unreal. And crazy thing is that he was co-players of the week. he was a co-player of the week this week for the NL with his teammate Paul Goldschmidt, who happens to play the same position. It's like, you know, I get the Cardinals have what, you know, the what some people call the devil magic, you know, where they get like random players and they turn good. But I don't know what it is with Albert Pujols. I think he went back to St. Louis and rediscovered his old form. And, you know, it's been amazing to watch. And the fact that he's able, I mean, the home run he hit tonight, pitch was basically at his eyes. But, you know, I think Gary Cohen said it best yesterday on the SNY telecast. It seemed like a pipe dream a few weeks ago that he'd get to 700. But now it's become, all right, he's close to passing A-Rod, which is at 696. And I think he's probably going to get 700 now.
So I think it's funny that you bring up Paul Goldschmidt. So Goldschmidt is having secretly a Hall of Fame caliber career, and he has hit at least 32 home runs in a season 5 times. He's going to hit that mark very soon, as soon as he launches number 32 this year. So that'd be 6 times for him. What Albert Pujols is doing for his entire career, to get to 700 home runs, he would have to average 32 home runs a season for 22 years. You look at a guy, his teammate now called Paul Goldschmidt, could be a Hall of Famer, hit that number 6 times. Pujols averaged it for 22 seasons. When Pujols hit his first major league home run, George W. Bush was in office. We are a lot of presidents down the line. When he hit his first home run, the New England Patriots had 0 Super Bowls. Keep that in mind. The Arizona Diamondbacks had not won a World Series yet. And if that of course happened 6-7 months later. What the tear that Pujols is on, and the tear that he has been on for 22 seasons, most of his 22 seasons, is one of the most special things in baseball lore. And I think it's a blessing that us fans that came along maybe perhaps a little bit late to enjoy the first 10 years of Pujols' career and have only seen a lot of the decline. Like, I started watching baseball in 2006. You can make a solid argument that Pujols' best years were behind him. He was amazing, like 01 to 06, just totally unstoppable. The Cardinals won the World Series in 2006. Then he had tacked on a few more awesome years in St. Louis before, you know, declining in LA, going to the other LA team, and now he's back with the Cardinals. But it is just magnificent what he's doing. And hopefully it doesn't end in a Cardinals World Series ring, because that is something that all of us would downvote, I would imagine. But it is nice to have the devil magic flow in the regular season for Prince Albert.
I mean, you just see what he's doing right now, and it's honestly incredible. I mean, I take a look at the split specially for him, where for Albert Pujols, I just want to bring this up because this is just incredible to me. Over the last 7 days, which, I mean, you know, small sample size, only 5 games, he has an OPS right now of just under 2,000. Not 1,000, not 1,500, just under 2,000, where in the span of 5 games has 17 total bases. That is insane. That's actually insane. And then on top of it, you know what? Let's bring it back. Let's bring it back to 14 days. Does it go down a little bit? Yeah, but just a little bit. Over the last 14 days right now, a batting average of 556, an on-base percentage of 586, slugging 1259 for an OPS of 1846. What the hell is this guy? Like, I remember, again, being a Mariners fan, I watched him a lot when he was with the Angels. And yes, did he do well against the Mariners? Yeah, actually, he did quite a lot. But it was also a lot of watching a guy that we've been talking for years was just out of it. It didn't seem like it was Albert anymore. It was just some guy that was getting to the very end of his career. And everyone was happy for him at this season because he was going for the walk-off. He was walking off with his teammates, Yadi and Waino. And it was going to be just a really good feel-good season. It wasn't even going to be, you know, playoffs or real big stat bit. It's like sad stuff like that. It was just going to be a fun looking season. Now we're looking at Pujols, and he is the best hitter over the last month of baseball. But it's not even close. And then, because I brought up just the last 2 weeks. Well, you know, let's go back to that a little bit. Let's make it the last 28 days. Okay, last 28 days, he's played 16 games. And over those 16 games, he has a batting average of .442. And still an OPS of .1477. And add on a little bit extra, he's slugging .977. There are a lot of players in baseball that don't have an OPS over that period that are as high as his slugging. Like, my word. What this guy has been doing with a baseball bat in his hands has been incredible. Is it sustainable? Absolutely not. But if anyone can, it's the machine Albert Pujols. Do I think he's going to get to 700, though? And that's the main question I pose to you guys now. At the beginning of the season, like we said earlier, it seemed like it was a pipe dream to see that he was going to be able to make it to 700. But this tear of his has really brought a newfound hope to see that we may see baseball's next 700 home run hitter. I want your guys' just quick takes on this before we move on to our next topic. Does Albert Pujols make it to 700 this season? Because he's already said that he will not play another season. This is it. He doesn't fit better. He finishes at 699. This is it. Does Pujols break 700?
I think he gets like right to 700. You know, because I know that there's, I'm bad at math here. There's you know about 6 weeks left in the season, and that you know I think. The way he's hitting right now, I can't see him not getting to 700. I don't know if he makes it much further than 700, but I think it happens. And, you know, we'll see where it goes.
Okay, I'm going to play mathematician here. He is currently not on pace to do so based on his games played, the number of home runs per game played, all that. However, there is an ace up the Cardinals' sleeve here. It's called the Brewers stink. So the Cardinals could very well wrap up the division. They have a 5.5 game lead as we're recording. Obviously, that depends on what the Brewers do against the Dodgers. But the Brewers are playing the Dodgers. The Cardinals are playing the Cubs. That lead could be 7-8, even more by the end of the week. By the time you're listening to this, it could be like a million games, regardless. This means the Cardinals could be playing in a lot of low leverage games, quote-unquote irrelevant games the last couple weeks of the season. This is prime Albert Pujols time. I don't see anything stopping them from putting him as high in the order as you can possibly imagine and just trying to grind out the plate appearances. Because guess what? In 5 years, 6 years, when he's in Cooperstown with 99.9999999% of the vote, because some idiot's not going to vote for him. I know it.
Someone's going to do a blank ballot.
Yeah, someone's going to be an idiot and not vote for him, but that's a story for 6 years from now. When we are talking about the legacy of Albert Pujols, we're not going to remember St. Louis like grinding away and giving him 20 at-bats in the last two games to get to 700, because he's going to get to 700. I'm confident in that now. Is it going to be pretty? I don't think so, but he's going to get to 700, very confident in that. I would throw money on it if it was available on a sports book, but he's going to get there. Might not be pretty, but he's going to get there, and long live the machine.
I'm going to take the bet here and say that, you know, he only does need to get 7 more. We still have, you know, a little more than a month left, which is, you know, a decent amount of time. Is it an outstanding amount of time? No. But, you know, it's decent. And with the tear that he's been on right now, I think he's going to try to ride the momentum as much as he possibly can. I think he's going to break 7. I don't know if he goes too far past 700, mind you, but honestly, I want to see him get it just because I think it would be great for baseball to see it. It would be one of baseball's best stories for years to come if Pujols gets to 700 home runs. Like, I mean, we'll be able to tell our grandkids about that we watched this guy that is going to be a legend, already is a legend. But we're going to talk about how we got to see this guy play baseball. We got to see this guy absolutely tear the cover off the ball for years and years and years and years. So,
yeah, I want to say that I think prime Albert Pujols is probably the most dominant hitter I've watched in my lifetime. And to see him sort of, you know, have some flashes of that old Pujols way, the old Pujols ways is pretty refreshing. And coincidence or not, the Cardinals have caught fire as he has, and they've won 8 in a row and are probably about to blow away the Brewers in the NL Central. You know, and I understand the, you know, I as someone who's not a big Cardinals fan, you know, this is the one time I'm slightly happier for them. I know I'm like I said, I'm not a big Cardinals guy, but you know, this is the one year I wouldn't mind too much if they made the playoffs.
So I have a couple rapid fire stats. First, Jeff Bagwell and Vlad Guerrero Sr. are Hall of Famers with 449 career home runs. Albert Pujols has homered off of 449 individual pitchers. Number two, Albert Pujols has raised his career WRC plus and OPS plus this season at age 42. He's a guy with 10 top five MVP finishes, all of the All-Star games, 1,100 OPS seasons in the past, one of the greatest players to ever live. Number three, in his last 10 games, he has put together a 567 batting average, 1,300 slugging, 7 home runs, and 14 RBI. The list of players in the history of the sport that have done that contains Barry Bonds, Larry Walker, Willie Mays. So essentially Mount Rushmore of 4-game stretches or 10-game stretches. And last, but certainly not least, in his last 50 plate appearances, he's slugging 956. That is 700 points higher than All-Star Austin Riley. And yeah, baseball is weird. The best player in the sport right now is 42 years old. It happens in football. Word to Tom Brady, but this is bizarre, man.
I think bizarre is a really good word for it, just because we are looking at a player that, I mean, I'll eat crow on this right now, where I thought that he was well past everything that he could, that he was really well to do a few years ago. I mean, him going to the Dodgers almost seemed like it was a, all right, cool, I just want to end things off on a team worth trying to get a ring. And it just felt bad. And so seeing it happen, everything happened this year, all right, cool, good on. It's like, cool, let's see the cool road, the little finale for these three players. But then seeing him go on this absolute tear has completely changed the narrative on all of it. So I hope he gets a 700. He has been on an absolute riot over the last month plus, and I hope that he does get to that milestone. Let's move on to our next topic on the day, as we're going to go from something that has exceeded expectations to falling way below expectations, as we're talking about the San Diego Padres here. Padres, over the last, let's say, month, have really been, you know, a disappointment. The overall team itself hasn't done well. I mean, hitting-wise right now, they've actually had a bit of a jump hitting-wise in this month as opposed to, say, the month of July. But guys, we're looking at a team that a lot of people were considering to be the number one team, not in even its division, but one of the top teams in all of baseball. And they just seem so lost. They don't seem like they're playing at a high level. They are losing a lot of ball games. I mean, they lost a game to the Nationals. I mean, no, just
they lost two games to the Nationals.
Like, don't remind me. One of those games definitely hurt me at least a little bit more. Will not explain why, but I don't know what to say about this team, especially when trade deadline. There we go. That's what I'm trying to say. At the trade deadline, they made waves, getting huge names: Josh Hader, Juan Soto, Josh Bell, and Brandon Drury. Even like, they really beefed up that team. And we had the discussion on air of, is this team going to compete with the Dodgers now for best team in baseball? And I think the answer to that is looking pretty obvious at the moment, where the Padres have really not looked like a real baseball team. They have looked, honestly, pretty bad. So, guys, we know that there's a few culprits to all of this, but I want your guys' take here of what's the reason? Why are we seeing the Padres play at this low level?
I mean, really, that's the thing is, since that day, since August 2nd, they've gone 8-10. And you look at it, they lost 5 in a row at one point, including they've been shut out. You know, I believe they've been shut out 1, 2, 3. They've been shut out 3 times in that stretch, including back-to-back games at one point. Really, it's their offense. I mean, Josh Bell went on a 1-for-32 stretch. Juan Soto's been fine, but, you know, he hasn't necessarily been hitting for power. Brandon Drury, you know, got off to that big start, the grand slam in his first at-bat, but he's really been lagging too. And then you have the bullpen, and I understand Josh Hader is, you know, he is dealing with some stuff too, but, you know, he hasn't been as advertised. It's just like it's just a lot of struggling and a lot of inconsistency, you know, around the team. So, you know, I remember when after the trade deadline, MLB.com released new power rankings and they ranked the Padres 4th. In fact, they ranked the Padres ahead of the Mets. And now the Padres have gone 8-10. And what I see right now is a team that really isn't as good as people thought they were. I mean, I get they made all those trades, but still they looked like a top heavy team. And now with Fernando Tatis suspended for the rest of the year and into next year, I really can't see them being much more than a first round exit.
Yeah. So with San Diego, keep in mind, this is San Diego. This is the same city that produced the Chargers that missed the playoffs despite having the number one offense and number one defense in the same season. This is a city that has wasted the likes of Hall of Fame talents, LaDainian Tomlinson, Dan Fouts, Tony Gwynn, and they have 0 championships. So I'm not exactly surprised. If you had to pick like a baseball team that would just emulate their city and just not play to expectations, it would be San Diego. If Buffalo is not available, good job, Buffalo. And you look at it, and last year we had the same issue. They missed the playoffs. It was so bad that ESPN Stats and Info had a post ready for the Dodgers and Padres to make the playoffs. They had it. They probably had it made in April. It was Machado and Betts, I think. It was going to be this great post, and they sent it out when the Giants clinched the spot. And everyone roasted ESPN for it. So this is a tragedy on, to me, a global scale. The city of San Diego should be tried for war crimes. They've wasted my time. They've wasted the money of countless bettors. And I think they should kind of disband as a franchise and send Juan Soto to Truist Park for the next 15 years. That's going to be great. And some behind the scenes, Mac is just shaking his head. You can have Fernando Tatis. That's okay. You can have 2 shortstops worth $681 million. That's fine. So I think the Padres, this is disrespectful at a certain point. They are wasting my time. They are wasting your time, the listener. They are wasting Alex's time. They're wasting Mac's time. I feel bad for the people that live in San Diego. Actually, I don't, because they live in a nice city. But I feel bad for San Diego sports fans. I feel bad for Chargers fans for having like this put on them because they can't root for the Chargers anymore because they're in Los Angeles. So you have such a disaster of a franchise, a disaster of an organization top to bottom. Your best player is, you know, getting ringworm. Your second best player, I don't even know who the second best player on the team is at this point, if you want to say Soto or Machado, but it is a full-fledged disaster. This team is still going to probably make the playoffs. I mean, I don't want to face them in the playoffs as like a Braves fan because, you know, Soto, Machado, Musgrove, Darvish, etc. But at the same time, that's a sweep. I'm not surprised. If that's a sweep for whoever they play in the playoffs, I'm not surprised. Could they make it fun? I mean, in theory, they could, but it's also San Diego.
Thank you, Splash, for the what I'm going to call the overacting rant. No, that was a fun time. What's not been a fun time right now is been watching the Padres. And I look at this team overall, and I just have so many questions because, to be real, I don't know why this is happening. Like, I'm looking at the team overall, and I can't really pinpoint too many, like, exact players. I mean, there's a few that immediately come to mind, the first of them being Josh Bell hitting basically not at all since going over to the team. And then you also have guys like Hader that have struggled in recent time. But we also know that Hader's been dealing with some kind of family issues. So I don't want to put everything on him as well there. Soto's been Ben Soto. And then they've also had, you know, Mr. Ringworm himself and Tatis that is now gone for the entire year. And is kind of causing a bit of their own little media circus. Oh, no, I know the exact reason why they're losing. They still have Robinson Cano on the team. Yeah. Well, they at least have
Robinson. Robinson Cano Robinson Cano. He was on the Braves for about a few weeks and then got cut by the Braves, too. So Cano isn't the issue, but I don't think he's the issue.
Cano is always the issue, no matter where he is. Like, I look at this team, and there's some guys that have actually played above expectations for you. I mean, like, I think Jerks and Profar is one of those guys. He's played 116 games for the team and is batting .245 with an OPS of .737, not the greatest, but still an OPS plus of .114. I mean, I take that. Yeah, Trent Grisham is starting to really pick things right back up, an OPS plus right now of .93, so below where you want it to be, but he's on the uprise on that. I mean, there's really not one area where this team, you could say, is truly at fault. Because at this point, it feels like most of the team is kind of there. Like, a lot of the team has just failed to perform. And, yeah, kind of what Splash said at that point. Now, San Diego fans should be angry right now. Because, okay, this is probably going to go a little too far, and I apologize for that. But the Padres, there's always been the adage of them, they're always the arbitrary champions. They've been the champions of the offseason before. They've been the champions of, like, 1 month. Or the champions right now of these are certain bits. But never World Series champions. At least in recent memories. This is a new kind of champion for them. They are the champions of the trade deadline, where they got all these amazing pieces and got everyone to talk about them. And yet, they've fallen off. They have fallen so far flat. I mean, how do you go from this team that has such incredible hope to nothing? Well, actually, it's a few easy steps. The first step is Josh Bell hits under .200. One of the people that you got in the Juan Soto deal. Two, Josh Hader, your closer, is no longer able to pitch at a closer level, so you can't close out ball games. And three, Fernando Tatis not playing for your team at all this season now and bringing that media circus right around him that is causing a distraction for the entire team. Three steps of how to end a year. And it's really kind of sad. Because at this point right now, we all love watching competitive baseball. We all love watching a good team. When the trade happened to bring Juan Soto to San Diego, we were on air talking about how excited we were of getting to see Soto, Tatis, Machado all in the same lineup. How fast has that fallen already? My word. Earliest we're going to see anything like that is next year, a month or so in.
Maybe.
We don't know what kind of Tatis we're going to see at that point. We don't know what kind of Machado we're going to see. We don't know if Soto's going to play it like that. It's just really depressing to watch. I just want to see, I want to see the Padres do well, just so then the NL West has more competition to it. Because it's really sad just watching the Dodgers beat up on everybody. Because the Dodgers are kicking ass.
Yeah, that's the thing is, you know, unless we count the 2020 season, the Padres haven't made the postseason since 2006, at least not in a full season. You know, it's just, they've had so many close, you know, 2007, they had lost the game 163 to the Rockies. 2010, they choked away, I believe, a 6.5 game lead. You know, last year they finished under 500, even though they were in a wild card spot for most of the year. You know, last year everyone thought the Padres were going to dethrone the Dodgers. A lot of people did. A lot of people thought that was going to happen in the 2020 postseason. But right now, I don't know how what they have to do to get past the Dodgers. But it's going to take a lot, and I just don't know if they have what it takes right now. I look at this team and I see, you know, them fighting to barely stay in that third wild card spot, and they maybe make it to the NLDS. I don't know what else to say.
I have something to say. So you mentioned 2006. That's the last time the San Diego Padres won the NL West. Since then, including this season, they have been equally likely to finish 30 games out of first place as they are to finish within 5 games. And the only other season between 5 games and 16 games is the COVID season that they only had 60 games to get blown out by. So I'm just going to read these off. So 1.5, 21, 20, 2, 23, 18, 16, 17, 18, consistency, 23, 33, 25.5, 36, 6 in the COVID year, 28, and they are currently 18 games behind the Dodgers. We are in the middle of August. You are 18 games behind the Dodgers. Now, granted, that's because the Dodgers are very good and on pace to win approximately 500 games this season, but goodness, this was supposed to be a competitive team. You can say, oh, they've won 68 of 124 games and they're on pace to make the playoffs and this, that, the other, but a competitive team isn't 18 games behind their rival. Like we were supposed to see the Padres and Dodgers as relative equals entering the season. We were supposed to see the Padres take the spot of the Giants as a 106 plus win juggernaut. Turns out the Padres are fool's gold. We actually should not be shocked by this because as you scroll on Baseball Reference, the Padres finished below 500 last year, below 500 in 19, 18, 17, 16, 15, 14, 13, 12. Hey, oh, in 2011 too, and 2009 and 2008. Congratulations, San Diego. As a franchise, you are about 600 games below 500. Loser franchise, hasn't been to a World Series in about 25 years. And I think we should punt on them moving forward, maybe disband the franchise. I don't know, give them another NFL team or something.
So now that we've kind of talked about what's been wrong with this team and what should be done about this team, let's play a little bit of hypothetical here. I want to ask you guys at this point, for the Padres this season alone, if there's one player alone that you change how they've done this season, like they've been bad or bit and turn them into really good, or turn them back to being good, or you just change one event. You know what? Actually, that might be more fun. Let's change one event that has happened for the Padres this season. What is the event that you would change? The very easy one here I see here is Tatis not getting busted for roids. That was the easy one. So I'm going to say, let's cut that one out. If we could come up with something interesting that happened, what is one thing that you would change? One event that you would eliminate from history? I have mine ready if you guys need some time.
I mean, can I stick with Tatis for a second?
Yeah, of course.
Oh yeah, it's him not getting into a motorcycle accident, busting his wrist. That's easy there, because that's the whole reason why he's been rehabbing this whole season. I mean, it's so easy, because right there then you don't have to worry about any of that stuff. You know, you don't have to worry about whatever the wacky excuse is for his PD usage, probably because he's with the team the whole time. You don't have to worry about him not being in the lineup all season, and they're probably in a much better position right now. So yeah, that's easy for me.
How recent of a window do we have?
I would say keep it to this year.
Okay, darn. Because I was going to say the inception of the franchise. That's where the problems began.
incorrect. Try again.
Darn. If I had to boil it down to one thing, maybe you could say like if Machado doesn't get injured halfway through the season, they're a little bit more competitive. But like the issue isn't the bats have been fine. They have a ton of guys with an OPS plus over 100. They have a ton of above average baseball players on the team. And that doesn't even count like Josh Bell, Brandon Drury, who have struggled since coming over. But I really have to boil it down to all of the offseason talk that this team was supposed to be good. And it's the expectations that are playing tricks on us. If we looked at this team from last season and saw they won, 77 games or whatnot, then I don't think we're going to have these huge, huge, huge expectations. But the problem is, that's not how you look at baseball. That's not how you look at any sport. You don't just say, oh, well, they won X number of games, they're going to get better. Sometimes that's the case, right? Like I can look at the Braves last year and say, oh, they're better than 88 and 73. I know that they just won the World Series, right? And over 162 games, they're probably going to win more games, right? And you think you can use the same logic with the Padres, and you can technically because they're significantly better record-wise than they were last year. But we just had the expectation that this was a World Series caliber team. They're throughout the season, they have been in the top five of World Series odds, depending on what day you go look at the bookie. It's Mets, Yankees, Dodgers, Astros, and the Padres were number five, or at least in the top five for a decent chunk of the season. And that's above some incredibly talented teams, some teams with better records than the San Diego Padres, like such as, I don't know, the Atlanta Braves, the reigning champions. I'm not salty about that, by the way. I just think it's bizarre that any other, I think in any other sport, that'd just be weird. But you are not even the fourth best record in the National League right now because St. Louis is on fire and they've won eight in a row and they're about to rattle off nine more and make it 17, word to their team last year. But I just think the issue was getting hyped up for a San Diego sports team in the first place. If you replace them with, I don't know, Arizona, we're happy for them. Colorado, we're happy for them. Miami, Washington, we're happy for them. Pittsburgh, Cincinnati, we're happy for them. But we had this expectation that the San Diego Padres were going to be world beaters. And it turns out they are owned, I don't use that word lightly, owned by the Los Angeles Dodgers.
So here's the move I kind of want to talk about a little bit. And I know we talked about that, and I'm not putting the full blame on him, but one move that I do want to at least, go back and reverse for this team is acquiring Josh Hader. Like we've talked about on previous podcasts where the Brewers, I've been vocal saying that the Brewers should not have traded Hader just because I liked the idea of what you got with having that incredible luxury of a lefty or righty that can come out of the bullpen and play the matchups and do it at an exceedingly high level. Since coming over to the Padres, Hader has struggled immensely. As looking at his stats right now, he has an ERA right now of 16.20 and a FIP of 10.92, which I mean, definitely shows the difference between ERA and FIP. But on top of it, he has one of the lowest overall ERA pluses at a 26. Right now, the only player that actually has, even according to baseballreference.com, that has a lower than him is Javi Guerrero. Like, here's my thing with it is that when you are the closer and you are in charge of that last inning, you have to take care of business. I mean, you have to try and get things done, and he has not. I mean, looking at right now, he has that FIP of 10.92. He has a WHIP of an even 3. I mean, like, come on. I think one of the good things I don't think is talked about a whole lot is the importance of a good closer. I mean, Mac, I know you could definitely attest this right now with Edwin Diaz for your Mets, that games feel secure in the ninth inning when Edwin Diaz comes out. When other closers come out in the ninth inning, fans should get hyped, and that also feel a sense of relief. And right now with the Padres, since haters come over, they have not felt that. It has just been, I'm scared, I'm scared, I'm scared, and for good reason. He has not performed well. And if you are able to rattle off those wins, just one win, a lot of times can turn a team's fortunes around. One win can get a team's momentum right back in the right direction. And when you have a lead going into the ninth, or if you are tied in the ninth inning, you cannot lose the ball game there, especially if you're the guy that that team trusts in the ninth inning. Again, I don't want to put a lot of this like mentally on Hader just because I know he's been going through some stuff. But at the end of the day, that's not San Diego's problem. At the end of the day, what matters are wins and losses. And with Hader pitching, it's been mostly losses. When was the last time that you saw an elite closer with an ERA that was over 10, let alone where it is right now for Hader, what, at 16.20? Like, I really hope he gets it all figured out because I like him. I like watching good left-handed relief pitching that is as especially as dominant as Hader is when he's on. But right now, he's just not on, and it's hurting the Padres even more.
Okay, I do want to throw it out there that Hader is dealing with some family stuff. So I think part of the blame here should go on the Padres for not being able to – actually, part of the blame with both the Tatis situation and the Hader situation, I think, lies squarely on the Padres in that they can't read the room. They are, like – a disaster of an organization because like they can't communicate with their players. You know, if I'm thinking if any other team traded for Josh Hader and Josh Hader was having issues and could not pitch, that team would let him rest, let him figure it out, either throw him in low leverage situations or let him like go on a break for a week. I don't know. There's a ton of different ways. Like for context, the St. Louis Cardinals, who were in the heat of a division race, let their starting catcher go to Puerto Rico to look at or to watch his basketball team play. That was a thing that happened, but the Padres can't give their closer a day off. The Padres can't fathom the just giving your closer a break, giving a human being a break when he has family problems. Come on now. I think that is bigger indictment on San Diego sports than anything I've said in the last half hour, because I think that is just failing as a human, failing as a group of people, failing as a organization run by humans. And I also want to throw it out there that Will Myers has a better ERA plus with the Padres this season than Josh Hader does.
So real quick, let me say one thing here real quick, yeah. Mac. I agree with you 100% Splash. I don't want whatever I come off to say as a thing directly on Hader. Like I said, I tried to make that as clear as I possibly could. But no, yeah, I think you're right. It is a bigger indictment on the Padres themselves as an organization than anything. So, again, but it is still a move that the Padres needed to not do if they knew that they could not handle it. So, all right, thank you.
Well, that was the thing is that, like, now finally the Padres have removed him from the closer's role, which is, like, honestly, they probably should have done that sooner or, like, giving him time off. I mean, you look, the Tigers have been giving Eduardo Rodriguez most of the season off for similar issues. Like, I it's just disappointing to see this. And honestly, it makes me question, like, AJ Preller, like, should he still be the GM? Like, I honestly don't know. So I think if the Padres miss the playoffs, something has to change. I don't necessarily think it's Bob Melvin. I think if anyone has to go, it's probably AJ Preller.
And I mean, that's definitely a huge way to go with it. And I think it's definitely a correct way to go with it as well. So now that we're done talking about the Padres, let's go back on a little bit more of an uptick, at least an uptick for me. And I guess, you know, with both you guys, I think you guys are okay with talking about this too. I want to talk about my Mariners, dang it. I want to talk about how I'm happy that the Seattle Mariners, for the first time, what feels like since 2001, basically, the team has a very good chance of making the playoffs. According right now to baseballreference.com, this team has, actually not baseball reference, excuse me, Fangraphs, this team has an 88.4% chance of making the playoffs, and the fact that they even have a percentage chance to win the World Series this late into August. We're about to be in September. Like, I, as a Mariner fan, I don't get to see this team succeed as they have recently right now. Again, don't get me wrong, last two games have been aneurysm inducing, but to see that in late August, this team not only has a chance of the postseason, but a good likelihood that they make the postseason is incredible to me as a fan. I want to get your guys' take on this team, because this is one that a lot of people have kind of gone a little bit back and forth on how strong this team really is. What is the strength of this team? Because they don't have a whole ton of name star power. I mean, yeah, they've got Julio Rodriguez. Yeah, they've got now Luis Castillo to be as their main ace. But after that, it starts to get a little hazy on who are the main recognizable names of this team. Yeah, you got Winker. That is there. Haniger is becoming, again, more well-known. But when you hear the bigger names of baseball, you don't think of a lot of guys that are on the Mariners. So, guys, I want to get your take. Is this team for real? Does it make the playoffs? And what is it going to take for them to make the playoffs?
Okay. First of all, the Mariners will make the playoffs. I apologize sincerely for doubting them at the beginning of the season. Wait, did I have them making the playoffs? I know I didn't have them winning the division, and both of you guys did. I know
you had the Detroit Tigers winning the Central.
Okay, we're not going to talk about that. Hey, I got the Astros right. At least I can get the AL West. Anyways, so they're going to make the playoffs. I'm pretty sure I had them making the playoffs anyways. But your point about like maybe unrecognizable players outside of Julio and not nationally recognized players, I agree with you, but I don't think that's, to me, that's just kind of Seattle as opposed to them not being exceptionally talented. And I think if you're a baseball bettor or you're a baseball fan and you just say, oh, Seattle, and you scroll, like go through their lineup card. Oh, I don't recognize any of these guys. You know, Adam Frazier, maybe he was in Pittsburgh last year, or Suarez had that big year a couple of years ago. How many players this season have these unheralded runs that they go from essentially nobodies to important pieces on deep contending playoff teams? Hint, every single season. You know who closed out 2020 for the LA Dodgers? Oh, Julio Urias. Who had heard of Julio Urias a couple years earlier? Oh, what about the 2021 Braves? Who was NLCS MVP? Oh, a guy that wasn't on the roster in June. Who was World Series MVP? Oh, a guy that wasn't on the roster in June. Like, it is these unheralded players that make big plays at big times. It's the World Series MVP, like the NLCS MVP, ALCS MVP. It always feels like it's going to the under the radar player. Like David Freese won both of them in the same year, and on a team with Albert Pujols, on a team with like much better players than David Freese, with all due respect. Steve Pierce won a World Series MVP. I don't even know who Steve Pierce is, and I'm a baseball fan, like outside of like Boston and Baltimore, of course. So like, I understand your worries, but I think that almost plays in your favor here, because when I look at the Seattle Mariners, I look at tons of talented players. When idiots look at the Seattle Mariners, they say, Julio and a bunch of guys I've never heard of, and a bunch of pictures on Baseball Reference that I don't recognize. That's why they're idiots, and that's why we're the ones doing a baseball podcast trying to teach the world that the Seattle Mariners are going to go 162-0. They're going to bask in their glory so hard that the rest of the league is going to forfeit the previous 56 games that they lost. They will sweep through the playoffs. I don't actually predict that to happen, respectfully, but
too late. You already said it. It's already in the air.
Yeah, they're going to sweep through the playoffs. They're going to go full, the Warriors lost a game in the playoffs. They're going to do one better than the Warriors. perfect season for Seattle, clearly 170 something and oh. The Astros are going to cry and cry in their trash cans. The Angels are going to trade Ohtani to somewhere in the NL East, probably the Mets, because that's just how baseball works. You're welcome, Mac. And Mike Trout is going to be a Philly because I guess so. Mac in the background is like crying here. Yeah, baseball's weird. Mariners 180-0 at me.
Yeah, these Mariners. I mean,
Splash. Thank you for giving me the biggest smile I possibly could. So thank you. Thank you for pandering to the host for today.
You know, the Mariners. It's interesting because I was very high on them coming into the year. I think I picked them to win the AL West. I know that was kind of bold, but Alex and I both did. But then you know, remember they had that cold stretch, and it, you know, they lost 4 or 5 to the Angels at one point, fall 10 games under 500. And at that point, people questioned, like, you know, what is this team really? And then they started finding their groove, and like, you know, they won, what was it, 14 games in a row at one point, you know, and, you know, they've sort of had like, you know, their hot and cold stretches, I guess, but I think this team is good. You know, if you go back to the middle of June, they've been one of the best teams in baseball. And their bullpen has been spot on with Paul Sewald, Penn Murphy. David Castillo's really found his own. Eric Swanson has been fantastic. Andres Munoz, he throws heat. Matt Festa lately has been better. Matt Brash has some good stuff. And obviously picking up Castillo was huge. And, you know, you have Logan Gilbert. I know Gilbert sort of struggled here and there, but Gilbert, Robbie Ray, I know he's sort of been up and down, and so is Gonzalez, but like, you know, it's a lot of solid arms. Even Flexen's been solid. George Kirby's been pretty impressive. I mean, their offense has made a ton of strides all around. Julio's been outstanding. I mean, really, I don't see much not to like about this team. And I agree that they don't necessarily need a superstar talent to get recognition from the rest of the league. So, I think for sure they're a playoff team, and you know, I as someone who has no conscious memory of the Mariners being in the playoffs, I'm very happy to see them playing this well.
So okay, I agree with you guys saying that, you know what, the name recognition is not what matters. Your name recognition is something that gets, you know, clicks on sport on ESPN.com. It's what gets podcasts like us extra clicks whenever we go very clickbaity, which we try not to do. But look, as a Mariner fan that has watched nearly every single game this season, I want to try and split between the fan and the analyst in me on this. So I'll try to talk a little bit as both. This team has been finding ways to win ball games in ways that are not as conventional. They are one of, I think they are the number one team right now in one run ball games. They, I believe at this moment still, again, fact check me if you guys want to on this one, are still undefeated when going into the eighth inning with a lead. I think that was a stat I heard. I want to say it was at like 44-0.
I know the Mets have a ridiculous record. I know the Mets haven't lost a game yet like that. So
if you guys want to fact check,
I don't know how to find that. I'm sure Splash might know how to find that.
On his way right now to doing it. I
don't have a Statheads subscription, so I wouldn't know.
Splash, if you ever find out that information, you may try to interrupt me, but just know you're going to be interrupting an angry Mariner fan in the middle of a rant. So do with that what you will. But I think overall with this team, the number one thing I think about is that the bullpen has been absolutely dominant. Oh, okay. We got a splash going. We got a splash sighting.
I can confirm that the Mariners had the best record in one run games in the American League, 27-15, basically 2/3 of their games, which is ridiculous. For what it's worth, the Rangers are the worst. They are 8-25.
Nice.
So that's about a 24% win rate there.
Rip. Did you find out anything about going into the eighth inning with a lead?
I can try to find that. It might be on Stathead. I'm not sure, but I'll be quiet for now.
Yeah, no worries. You got you. But so going back to what I was saying, this team has a bullpen that I don't think anybody thought was going to be as good as it was. I think a lot of people at the beginning of the year thought that the main guys were going to be Paul Sewald, Drew Steckenrider, and Ken Giles. Now, to kind of give you an idea of those three players, Sewald is the closer. So, got that one right. Ken Giles was recently DFA'd after getting injured again. And Steckenrider, who was one of the biggest surprises last year alongside Sewald, completely fell off the face of the planet and was DFA'd as well. So, that's where the problem kind of turns into with this team, is that they continue finding ways to make players do exceptionally well. Where does it stop? And I'm hoping it's nowhere soon, because this team has been playing exceptional baseball. And finally, the offense is really starting to catch up to how good their pitching has been. Their pitching, again, been one of the best in all of baseball, as now I'm getting the sign from one splash with a smile on his face, meaning that he's probably going to ruin my day.
Yeah, I'm going to ruin your day. You were wrong. It's actually 49-0 when leading ahead, when they're ahead in the eighth inning.
So I was right with undefeated.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I was right. I just said the last time I saw it was at 44. You're right.
Also, this might be crazier. When they lead, when the sixth inning begins, they've won 98% of games, 45-1. Wow.
Jeez.
Ironically, they did blow a lead that they did not lead in the eighth inning, but did lead in the ninth inning, 52-1 when they lead entering the ninth inning. 6-51 when they trail entering the ninth inning. So they can get those comebacks.
Fair enough. So, okay. And that's the thing with this team, is that this team has so much fight in it. I love that. This team knows how to win and has been winning by scoring early, by getting runs on the board, and then not trying to do too much. That's the other thing I like about this team, is that they don't try to go too far out of their own zone. They do their jobs, and that's what I like about them. I said that about four times right now. Cool. Good job for originality. But right now, when you stay in your zone and when you do your job, you win ball games. There's a reason why the team was assembled the way it was. The team was assembled to win. And right now, with players like Castillo making their, Luis Castillo coming over to the team and doing as well as he has, aside from his last start, has been very good now to see that the team has a true ace. But then you have other starting pitchers like Robbie Ray, who has really stepped up as of late. You have Logan Gilbert, who is still one of the best young pitchers in baseball. One of the best, not the best. Don't at me right now. And then a bullpen that is including guys like Andres Munoz, who I've been high on since he came over to Seattle. Oh, it's amazing. Splash just said right now that the Mets right now are 69-0 with leading in the ninth. Very, very nice. But anyway, that's kind of what I see with this team, is that the names that are doing this are not names that are going to be, you know, seen by a lot of people. You know, they're guys like Matt Brash, who his biggest real media spot was during spring training when ESPN finally got a look at his slider and said, this guy is going to be a problem. But then you got guys like, you know, Matt Festa, who has just came in and done his job. Andres Munoz, who I've been stupidly high on, finally finding a little bit of his control. Like, I like what I'm seeing from this team, and they're winning ball games. So right now, when the regular season ends and they have a playoff spot, either expect one of two things from me. Either A, I'll be on the podcast just constantly playing Celebrate Good Times, or I will be running through the streets screaming at the top of my lungs and you'll have to come and get me, because I will knock myself out from lack of air from just continuously screaming. But I'm so excited watching this team. They have done such amazing work. We're already at an hour. Is there any other things we want to talk about when it comes to the Mariners? I can obviously talk about them forever, but I also want to give you guys more time to talk on this, because otherwise I know I'll dominate the conversation.
Okay, I do want to correct myself. I said that no one knew who Julio Urias was before the 2020 World Series. He was a top five prospect in baseball when he came up in 2016, so I'll take the lap on that one. But in fairness, was he the player you picked to end the World Series? No, that's the point I'm trying to make here. That, you know, I don't want to say unknown, but like the unexpected happens and the unexpected wins a lot of games. And, you know, having Mitch Haniger, you know, he's going to have a critical hit in the playoffs, or pick a random guy on the Mariners and only Alex would know. They're going to have a big hit. They're going to be a big reason why the playoff drawdowns.
I'll give you the name right now. Sam Haggerty. Haggerty is the guy. He is the guy that he, not only is he going to get the big hit in the playoffs, in game seven, there's going to be a runner on second base. He is going to be he's got a pinch run for the guy who's on second base. He'll steal third base and then we'll get the game winning run. Calling that right now. Anyway, sorry, please continue, Slash. I am so sorry for interrupting you.
Yeah, I mean, Haggerty is a good shout, but I definitely think it's going to be one of the unheralded players win games in baseball. Like, it's not, do you know how many rings, do you know how many playoff wins Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani have combined? Zippo. You know how many playoff wins, like, some random dude, like, Dylan Lee started a World Series game last year, and now he's like, well, until he faced the Mets, was a very good reliever and like all-star caliber reliever. Now he has like an ERA over 10 in the last 3 weeks. But either way, unheralded players do unheralded things. So, Alex, I think that leads in your favor because you have more quote-unquote unheralded players, because a lot of baseball fans are idiots and don't pay attention to the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, and I feel like that. I mean, speaking of unheralded, I mean, you look up and down this lineup, and I feel like the Mariners' offense is underrated in the fact that basically all their regular players outside of Adam Frazier and I guess Carlos Santana have an OPS plus upwards of 100. And I'm not talking like barely over 100. I mean, like well over like 120, 130 range, most of them. So I feel like not enough people are talking about that. I mean, Sam Haggerty, I remember when Sam Haggerty was on the Mets and primarily used as a pinch runner and a defensive replacement. And now he's been like a semi-regular for the Mariners. I mean, it's crazy how the Mariners have been able to do that, really. It's awesome. And Dylan Moore's started to look sort of like what we thought he would be. You know, all around this team is it's fun. I mean, you know, Suarez is 22 homers. He's up there. You know, Julio's up at 19. Heck, Cal Raleigh has 18. He's tied for second in the majors among catchers. You know, Jesse Winker's caught fire. I mean, when this offense gets going, it's really hard to stop. And, you know, Haniger's come back. He's sort of looked like the old Mitch Haniger. If only Jared Kelenic was hitting the way Jared Kelenic would and not putzing around in the minors. But I think there's a lot of big things ahead for this team. And I'm not just talking about this year.
No, yeah, I feel like this is the very start of something huge for Seattle. And, yeah, I want Kelenic to do well, but right now I like the outfield where it's at right now, where you have Julio Rodriguez out in center field, you have Winker out in left, and you have Ham Swaggerty over in right, which, by the way, Sam Haggerty, an OPS plus of 147. Just want to throw that out there real quick. Anyway, I will never stop giving Sam Haggerty propaganda. It's my version of Strider. Anyway, as we are now at the end of the podcast, are there any other last shouts you want to give on here before we end it off for today?
If Vaughn Grissom had played more than, I don't know, a month and a half, the Braves would have the number one, number two, and number three vote getters in Rookie of the Year voting.
Yeah, I just want to say that the Mets have two more wins than they did all of last year. So, yeah, even though they've had like an up and down road trip, trust me, they'll get a day off and September will be smooth sailing, I think. So, yeah, keep your heads up, boys.
Okay, Mac, will we get a Braves-Mets playoff series, yes or no?
Very likely, I think, and it'll result in some – I think it'll be in the NLCS and it'll be like a seven-game series or something.
I predicted that at the beginning of the year.
I want that to be the case so badly. That would be absolutely incredible.
Wild. We would have to do a live show for that.
Oh, please. Yeah, no, I was about to say at this point right now, I'd almost think we would have to at this point get like,
Splash, I'll
I don't
fly
know.
out to Atlanta for that.
Oh my goodness. I'll be home for that too. Because like the last
Nice.
couple years have been, well, 2020, you didn't, well, there were, well, you could go to the game, but you had to, there's like a restaurant at Globe Life that like you can get tickets for. You could buy tickets to the World Series, but you would be sitting in a restaurant, not in the stadium.
My friend that went to TCU and is from Atlanta, he went to one of those Dodgers Braves games in Texas.
I'm jealous, but at the same time, we lost the series. The one that got away from me is Friday, Saturday, Sunday of the World Series. I was out of school, and if the plane tickets weren't freaking four figures both ways, not one way, both ways, I would have gone to at least one, if not more, World Series games. So that's going to be the bummer. So hopefully they go back and I'll be in Atlanta this time, so I don't have to worry about flying there. So Braves, please make the World Series while I'm living in Atlanta. Thank you. Also, Vaughn Grissom is very good at baseball.
My last shout then is I am so happy to be a Mariner fan right now. Just I want, please, please don't find a way to somehow blow this in the last month. Just continue playing good baseball and don't lose it. Very much, please, and thank you. But anyway, that's going to do it for our show today. Thank you so much to Matthias Ullman, Kurosaki, and to Ryan Splash Potts. You can go follow them on Twitter. Go follow Mac at Matthias underscore A underscore K. Go follow Splash at Mr. Splashman 19. And you can follow me on Twitter at the Sports Guy 242. But for everyone here at Cheap Seats Chatter, I am Alex. I have been your host for today's podcast. Have a great rest of your day. Stay safe and hope to see you all real soon. Thank you.